This is Let's Keep It Real with Sandy Joy Weston, your weekly dose of positivity with awesome stories and guests from all over the world. It's an opportunity to learn some great new things and expand your mind. We'll tackle topics from all areas of life, and as always with Sandy, the sky's the limit.
Hello, hello, my Let's Keep It Real people. Okay. I know you've been asking me for like a billion years. Okay, maybe not a billion years, but months to bring somebody on to work with your anxiety. Specifically, you requested over and over again, your breathing. And I know there's a lot of different types out there, but before I get into it, I'm going to introduce you to Rachel Friedman, who's going to help us out. She is the founder of Somatic, yes, Somatic Coach School, where she helps people struggle with high-functioning anxiety, break free from overthinking. No, say it's not true. We don't overthink. And overanalyzing through somatic healing. Holler. She also trains therapists, coaches, and healers to integrate somatic skills into their practice, so they can provide life-changing results for their clients. She believes our bodies hold the wisdom. Amen, sister. And we need to heal and live an incredible human experience, one where we learn to feel all emotions. Rachel, welcome. I'm so happy to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Sandy.
I've been doing this podcast by a different name for about 17 years.
Wow.
And I've never had somebody on with this subject matter. Is that whacked?
That is whacked, my friend.
Yeah. So I'm really excited. But before we get into that, you get to pick one word that best describes your past 30 days. Good, bad, or ugly. What's the word? And then tell us why. Whatever pops in your head.
Explosive. That is the word that just popped in my head.
Okay. We never had that either. So there we have it. I love first. All right. Tell us why explosive.
Explosive. I would say because over the last 30 days, there has been a fair amount of change and transition personally in my life, but also in my business. So my businesses, because I have multiple.
And I don't doubt.
Serial entrepreneur here. And manifestor if anyone's into human design. And I, that's just me. I get bored easily and jump into the next thing. I would say explosive because not in a negative way either, right? Like it's in a way that things have kind of just been exploding all over the place, right? So my yoga studio, it's just hit its 6-month mark. We had an open house this past weekend and it did amazing. We had just great turnout. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. My coaching business has kind of two legs. One side of it is, you know, really teaching people how to integrate a lot of these tools into their business. And so really deepening the connection with their clients and their clients with themselves. And I've seen some pretty cool explosive results with a lot of my clients recently. I say their clients are my clients too, even though I probably don't ever meet any of them, but that's super fun. And then I would say just in my personal life, right? You know, my husband and I went away to Miami about a week ago, 2 weeks ago. Ah. And that was super fun to just get away and just explosive, not like in a like crazy way, but it's just a great time, you know? And the word for me explosive is just things are like popping and booming. Yeah. And yeah. I love that. And then, you know, some always life is 50-50. And then, you know, we got the shit storm, right? You know, of stuff happening, like got a traffic ticket in the mail the other day for a ridiculous amount of money. Apparently I passed a school bus. I didn't even know I did it. So, you know, that shit too.
Yeah.
I always like to be real. Like life's no perfect ride. You know, when you got one side over here, maybe booming, the other side over here, maybe it's crashing, you know, and that's okay. Mm. How do we learn to just kind of embrace it all? So yeah, that would be my word, I think, at the moment. Ironically,
I want to tell you, I've had yoga people on And I know this is going to be awesome already because there'll be like ease and flow. Calm. Oh, yeah. When you say explosive, I'm like, this is not your typical woman here.
Not your typical yoga instructor, facilitator, leader. I think it's why my studio, I believe, does so well. And because we use the F-bomb a lot, or I use the F-bomb a lot, I really encourage people to just show up as themselves. Sometimes, yes, we need to relax and be more in the flow. And sometimes we're just working through our perfectionistic, high anxiety for some people, high functioning, I like to say, because there's a difference. And just be you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not that super relaxed, chill yoga teacher. I'm more of the like high energy, going to get you up, moving, sweating buckets and cursing.
My kind of yoga, man. My kind of yoga. But it's in Georgia. All right.
Yeah, which is not where I'm from. So a lot of people here are kind of like, what just happened?
Okay. Before we get into our questions, I want to go a little bit into your background so that people know what drew you into this. Because I find it fascinating that you tell us about. On the surface, everybody, you know, is great. The family, the kids. But even after vacation. So let's go into that just a little bit.
Yeah. So what kind of got me into all this work? Well, I mean, in all truthfulness, I went to school to be a psychotherapist, and I did do that for a few years. Yeah. A lot of people don't know that about me, but I am technically a licensed psychotherapist also. I don't really practice in that way at all, for the most part. And along the journey, I was struggling, honestly, myself, a lot of anxiety since I was probably about 15, 16 years old is when I remember it. I didn't know that's what it was back then. It was just, Rachel, you need to relax more is what my, stop being so sensitive. I grew up in a Jewish home. I love my parents, but there was a lot of get over yourself type of, you know, and move on. So I ended up kind of falling into yoga while I was practicing therapy for personal reasons. And I fell in love with the practice. I started to find that I personally was getting a lot of really cool results from the practice that I hadn't really gotten from personally seeing a therapist on my own. And it's not to say there's some really amazing therapists out there. But for me, something just shifted when I was on the mat, and I really started to notice not like an extreme difference, but subtle differences, like those 1% shifts, which drew me into going to yoga teacher training, like 15, 16 years ago at this point, and got me into meditating regularly because I'm also the good girl student. So my yoga teacher trainer was like, you must meditate twice a day, 20 minutes each round. And I was like, okay. And at the time I had a 1-year-old and a 4-year-old, which everyone, it blows a lot of people's minds that I say somehow figured out how to do that. I don't know how I did. It's all blur now. And I slowly realized that the asana, the physical, the meditation, and then I was incorporating, you know, things I had learned, you know, in school, as a therapist, that these elements were, my anxiety was like slowly but surely decreasing. The things I was spinning out of control about became less and less. And then long story, I could talk about this all day. But I kind of in a yoga training stumbled upon somatics, the practice of actual somatic therapy, that Shawn Korn, who I was doing the training with, if anyone's heard her, she's an amazing activist, amazing teacher. She said, hey, Rachel, I really think you should look into seeing a somatic therapist because I was having some issues with my shoulder and I was born with something in that area. So she's like, it might be trauma-based because nothing had helped. I'd seen physical therapists. I mean, I'd seen chiropractors. I'd seen everyone. So I did. And that was kind of when I would say I realized that this to me was like, boom, boom. Like everyone needs to understand, not just connect to the body, but learn how to actually learn how to use what the body's communicating. Not just, you know, in a way for physical, but often for mental, emotional too. And so that was kind of it. And so I just kept diving deeper and deeper into it. And, you know, kind of now I look back and it all connects, right? Like the therapy, plus the yoga and somatic therapy is in some ways, a lot of it's in the realm of yoga.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember years ago, Rachel, so I owned health clubs my entire life. That's what I've done. And we had everything. So we had the yoga, the Pilates, the spin, you name it. We had it. But the only thing I couldn't do is yoga because I was born with hip dysplasia. So my hips are tilted. I didn't know what it was, way far forward. So as a dance major, you know, ballet sucked for me, but I liked the mental part of yoga and the emotional part. But every time I would take the class, I would have to modify 90% of it. Or they would tell me, you're not one with your mother and the universe. And I'd be like, I can't. Because you know what I mean? Back, it was like we're talking, you know, a while ago. And then I'm like, you know, there's got to be more types of yoga out there.
Yeah.
So I went, no one could believe it. Like, this is like 5 years ago. I went to Kripala.
And I love it.
And I was like, wait a minute. I knew there was stuff out there that I could relate to. Yeah. Now, I did the dancing, the drums, but I always said that for me, the meditating, I did better when I was moving.
Mm-hmm.
That's just for me. Like
when
I'm moving or hiking or biking or even just flowing, that's when I meditate.
Yeah. And I tell people all the time, like meditation doesn't have to be just you sitting on the floor, or sitting on a cushion, or sitting on a chair with your eyes closed. There are different ways to go about it. And it's figuring out how it's going to best work with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I want to dive into listening to your body, because I got lots of questions here because they hear it. So the people that are aware of it, you know, your body doesn't get rid of anything. It stores everything. It tells you, you know, what you need to know. But a lot of my, I'm going to call them high functioning type A personalities, I being one of them for a long time, you don't want to slow down to listen.
Mm-mm.
Until you have to.
Because we're doers.
Yeah. And they know, like I got really injured mountain biking in 2019. I couldn't move for like 6 months. They couldn't figure it out. But my coach said, oh my God, it's such a blessing. I'm like, I'm going to kill you. But he knew that's what I needed to really tune in and listen. It wasn't just falling off my mountain bike 18,000 times. So they want to know, dear Rachel, we don't want to become Sandy. Get to the point. They've ignored it so bad. They can't move for like 6 months. How can they start slowing down to listen? They know it's important. And it was said in a million ways, but
yeah.
I appreciate it.
And I mean, again, there is no right or wrong way to do this. And there is, I can't say, you know, Sandy, for you, do this. Like, I don't believe that there is a one-size-fits-all approach. But if you're having a hard time slowing down or you haven't taken that time to slow down, one of my people are like, that's actually so simple. The simplest way I recommend people to start is when we all drive from place to place, turn off the podcast. Sorry, Sandy. Turn off the radio. Turn off the podcast and drive in silence and just start to notice that when you are, you'll still have the outside. So it's not quite, it's not meditation, right? Because you got to watch where you're going. You're not closing your eyes or anything, but your brain, when we, all the outside noise gets quieter, you can't help but hear what's going on inside. So we have to get, I don't say get rid of, but we have to quiet all this outside noise in order to start to listen. So the easiest way I find for most people is if I say, oh, go spend 5 minutes and sit down and just sit. I find most people really ironically struggle with that. Even though it's that too is simple, but it's not as like making the time, committing to it as easy as saying, just turn everything off in your car. And when you drive your kids to school, well, not best case, because then you got your kids chatting their ear off at you.
Yeah.
When you're in the car by yourself,
On the way home from dropping the kids off.
I was about to say, you just dropped the kids off. You're on your way back. Don't pick up the phone and call your best friend or your mother or your sister. Turn it all off. Spend those 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes with yourself and start to listen to what does it start. And it might start with a running to-do list. A lot of people it does. Well, I need to go to the grocery store and I need to do this. And that's okay. Once it runs through all that shit, then you'll start to actually start to hear what's going on.
Okay. So we're going to go into this guy's question. I'll call him Billy Bob because he's talked about that. He goes in his car or his walk and he doesn't play music. He just listens to his thoughts. But tell Rachel, they freak me the hell out. So I haven't, that's not the first time I've heard that.
Hear it all the time.
People do not want to hear what's going on up there. And this guy says, I have to admit, I didn't realize how negative I was.
Yeah. Okay. Love this question. And I like to just first off want to validate him and anyone else who's listening. Our brains are actually naturally wired for the negative, but they are problem solvers. That's why we exist today. That is why we exist. So one of the things I like to do is normalize anxiety. Most of us are walking around with it. A, because without it, right, a certain degree of it, then we aren't going to be present to. So there's like a normal level of anxiety that we all are going to live with, right? That we could just normalize for a moment, right? Like we want to have a little bit. That's what keeps us on our toes and keeps us alert around our surroundings, like for the saber-tooth tiger that's about to attack us. Now, saber-tooth tigers aren't attacking us anymore, but maybe your bosses or your partner says something that triggers you. But so let's just normalize for a moment that our brains, I don't want to say are wired for negativity, but they are wired to solve problems. So we are always going to be on the search for how am I going to solve this problem? So what happens though is the problem then spirals. And it becomes almost like obsessive for a lot of us. At least I know it used to for me, right? Like it was a little problem like, oh, how am I going to get my kid from here and the other kid here, right? Something as simple as that. And then all of a sudden, oh, well, you know, my ex-husband, oh, he's not going to help me. So how am I going to manage all, you know, and then your brain spirals out and then I got to do this and this and this and blah, blah, right? Or maybe your brain spirals into places of, I hear it all the time from a lot of women, you know, oh, if I could just get rid of that little, like that 5 pounds, that 10 pounds that makes me feel like my fat is just hanging over my pants, right? And then it spirals into, well, I ate that today and I ate that today. And then, God, I'm just like so mad at myself. And we start to beat ourselves up is normally what happens.
Yeah.
Like you said, and we get really mean. And I call it inner abuse. And so we start to beat literally the crap out of ourselves. And we don't even realize most of the time we're doing it because we do it all so often all the time. Yeah. So, but you get quiet and you hear it. And I know we don't want to hear that stuff because who wants to hear that? But it's happening even if you don't hear it, in all truthfulness. So you can either choose to actually listen to it and then have the power to change the dialogue, or you can ignore it and it will never change. I can guarantee you. So hear the dialogue. And then this is what I say to all my clients. What would you say if someone was saying that to your best friend or even worse to your child? Would you say, stop? Would you say, ouch? Would you say, I don't like that tone? What would you say? And most of us, if someone came and just punched you in the gut, no reason, our gut reaction is going to be, ow, that hurt. But we don't stop and say, ow, that hurt when we're treating ourselves this way. So first off, you got to slow down so you can hear it, even though you might not want to hear it, which is most of the people. I get it. I didn't want to hear it either because it's awful. For the most part, right? But once you hear it, here's the difference. You can respond to it. And if you respond to it with ouch, it loses some of its grip. And the more, I've had people that That's all they do. They just start responding to it with ouch, 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 ouch. One of my clients said, oh my God, Rachel, I think I said ouch 1,000 times today. Awesome. Because then tomorrow, maybe you'll say it only 999 times. So that means one less time you beat yourself up. One less time. 1% shifts every day.
First of all, I'm taking notes because I really love the refrain of not negative or problem solvers. So that's really cool. And I also like, and I know it sounds so like, duh, but it's going on whether you want to listen to it or not. It's there.
It's there.
It's there. So now what? Like, but this woman, so what do you do about this? This woman, we'll call her Betty Boop, said, when she listens to her thoughts, she is a healer.
Okay.
Peace, love, and joy. I'm laughing because she says, when I started listening to my thoughts, I didn't realize how many people I hate.
Oh my God, that's awesome. Best one ever.
You gotta talk. That's hysterical. Like, here I am.
My question for her would be, okay, why is that a problem? Maybe it's maybe
she's
it's
a healer.
Yeah, she's a healer. So she, she's shaming herself. She's shaming herself for hating people. But she's a human first. I'm a healer too. And I'm still human fucking first. So my nervous system is always, not that this is necessarily a nervous system response, but like, for example, it cracks me up now when people come through my program and they're like, well, I'm a healer and I should know better because I have all these nervous system tools. I'm like, I've been doing this shit for like a decade and my nervous system's still going to react. And then I'm going to have to go back and apologize because guess what? Your nervous system was designed to keep you alive and protect you.
Yeah.
Stop shaming yourself. You're still human first.
I always loved the quote. I remember one of my coaches who said it years and years ago. I'm just trying to stay one step ahead of my clients.
Yeah. Well, I tell my clients all the time, if you're just one step ahead, you're doing great. And if you're not, that's okay too. As long as you can hold space for people, that's, you don't have to be that much. Anyways, to me, there's so much out there that like in the coaching and the healing world that you have to be able to like almost give people advice. But true coaching, true healing work is not advice giving because we're holding space. I believe my clients have all the wisdom for the most part they need. I'm just going to pull it out from them.
Let's break it down. Somatic breathing. They want to know about it. How's it different? A lot of them do four-sided breathing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we got.
Okay. Well, there's several different techniques that you can use. And four-sided breathing is an amazing technique, right? Inhale, pause, exhale, pause, box breathing, call it whatever you want. I recommend it all the time, over and over again, because it is just, it's great. So it's not that there's somatic breathing is a style. Somatic breathing is a bunch, I would say a collective of styles that I don't know. I wouldn't say that it's mine, but I've grabbed from yoga, from doing breath coaching, from doing other schools, and I put them into like a toolbox. So my favorite style of breath is actually one I learned in a yoga training, in a 500-hour yoga training, and it's ratio breathing. And so what ratio breathing is to simplify, because it's not quite as simple as I'm going to make it sound right now, is you work on extending the exhale longer than the inhale. Now, if someone is depressed, then we're going to flip it. We want to then extend the inhale longer than the exhale. So you can actually gauge the length of the breath somewhat based on the need of your client. So it's you break... Again, I'm trying to simplify it, but you're basically creating ratios between inhales and exhales. Exhales tend to calm the nervous system. So we want to extend the exhale for example, with racing thoughts, anxiety.
Yeah.
But if you're having a hard time getting yourself up and going, the inhale is more of the stimulator. So then we might want to increase the inhale versus the exhale. Can also combine them.
So what I'm hearing from you over and over again is that, which I love, it isn't one size fits all with anything. Mm-hmm. Mm-mm. Every client has, you know, different
Everybody's
needs.
unique.
Yeah, depending on what yoga, what meditation, what breathing. So in your yoga, what type of yoga do you teach?
So ironically, my yoga studio is a hot power yoga studio. I was telling Sandy, I'm a big F-bomb girl. And people get often this idea of power. They think it's just, oh, you're just going to kick my butt and make me work really hard. And there is a level of that. But really the term power yoga, my teacher said, comes from the word, actually they believe it came from the word to empower. So to empower people to do things that make them step out of their comfort zone,
ooh,
right?
I love
to go
that.
Beyond what your normal level of what you believe your ability is. So that does not necessarily mean a power yoga practice is going to be just a bunch of handstands and arm balances. A lot of mine aren't that at all, but I might make you hold things longer than you're comfortable. I'm going to make you sweat a lot because that's cleansing and it feels good, honestly, yeah. Even though a lot of people have different opinions. But it's really the whole practice is a practice of empowering you. And so I actually was the other day, I think I should coin this, or I don't know if there's already a, you know, a copyright on it, but mat therapy, because what I see it as is it's like moving mat on your mat, and it's a therapeutic process because not only are we moving through these postures, and some of them, if you understand the science behind them, are designed to specifically help, for example, with anxiety, but we're also going to get you thinking in different ways as you're moving and breathing. So it's like, it's pretty actually, I don't want to say complex, but it's, I don't even know what the word would be, but it's very intentional how the things are placed together.
Yeah. So in the classes you have, are there different levels or it's adjusted for any level that can come in and modify?
It's all levels. And I don't have a big staff. I think there's four of us. And it's very important to me that all of my teachers have been teaching for, you know, a fair amount of time. They have extensive education and they understand that if someone comes in and they've never done it before, or if there's someone who's ready to be challenged to twist their body up like a pretzel, that we can talk to either one.
Yeah, I love that. So we have to go back to the anxiety because I got so many questions with this. But this is from a teacher. And she says, when she's in class and she teaches high school seniors, she's fine. When she steps out into the hallway, she gets anxiety. So many kids, fluorescent lighting, it's just too much. Is there a breathing exercise she can do while she's going from classroom to classroom? Or go to the bathroom and do it? Because she said, in class, I'm fine. But I come out in that hallway and there's thousands.
Yeah, all the people. Yeah,
students have said the same thing.
Yeah, well, and it makes sense because it's overstimulating to her nervous system.
Yeah, and she's not in control when she's in class.
Here's what I would actually suggest with that is what I call is resourcing. I don't just call it, that's what it's called. And it's literally like, God, I think I have a free video on this somewhere, so I could even send it to you. But it's basically like, find five things that are blue and label four things I smell and three things I hear. And two things I can touch. And so that grounds you. Because what's happening is she's ungrounded in that moment when there's so much chaos around her. So you got to find, that's one way. It's called resourcing. And it's starting with 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 with your senses. The other thing that is super simple is bringing, and I'm going to actually go not so much for the breathing, although you could do, you know, the ratio breathing everywhere, anywhere, but would be just connect to your feet on the ground and wiggle your toes, feel your feet on the ground, and then just feel your legs and then feel your pelvis, feel your body in that space.
Mm.
And I usually start with some people, all they need is feet on the ground. Let me just pause and feel my feet on the ground, take a deep breath, and just stay there for a moment and really just feel your feet. And then it's just one foot in front of the other. Stay connected to your feet, to your ground.
All right. I got to get this one in. College kid, art student. They have critiques. They look, teacher, everyone, even though they're nice, looks at the art. Every time he has to do the critique, he has panic attacks. He starts getting anxiety. His teacher said, "Yo, Joe, you need to learn some breathing exercises." So he wants to know, do you think breathing could help him?
100%. Yeah, 100%. The extending that exhale breath. So simple is how breathe in and double the exhale. So if you breathe in for three, exhale out for six. But even another step further, my guess is the anxiety is about his fear of the critique.
Yes.
And what is going to be said. And my guess, it's if he can start to hear the dialogue of what's going on in his head, that's going to be more powerful. Like, yes, in the moment, the breath work can be powerful, but even more powerful is starting to like actually tune into that anxiety. So his heart, you know, if his heart is racing, feel the heart racing and then like just stay with the heart racing, like actually feel it, not try to push it away or resist it.
Wow.
Believe it or not, that's the worst thing we can do. Feel the heart racing and then remind yourself, I am here, I am safe. Like no matter what happens, I'm going to be okay. Because it's the fear that he's not going to be okay. Something's going to be said and that is going to be painful. But I can tell you, words can always be said. The only reason they're painful is we believe it. So you get to choose if you're going to actually take on that person's opinion. And it's not to say become like a narcissist and don't take anyone's feedback. Absolutely. But it only hurts as bad as it hurts is because then we are now saying it to ourselves over and over. Like, let's say the critique is like, oh, that painting is not up to par and you need to do this, this, and this, right? The only reason that we're panicked, and this is with anyone, all of us, is that A, that judgment, but it's really because now we're going to go judge ourselves and we're going to go beat ourselves up. But again, you can learn how to stop beating yourself up. And then that anxiety, I can almost guarantee you will dissipate.
I love it. I just want to make sure, because I'm taking notes here, that yes, the breathing will help. But more than that, if the heart starts racing and you get sweaty palms, don't try to stop it.
No, because the more you resist anything, the more it persists.
Right. So just say, it's all right. I'm okay. I'm safe. I've been here before. I'll be okay.
My body is trying to just give me a signal. That's all it is. That's all the heart racing. That's all the sweaty palms is. All of that is just your body saying, whoa, we're in danger. And it's like, look around. Am I actually in danger? Is there a saber-tooth tiger about to claw me?
Yeah.
I'm going to guarantee you for most of us, that is not the case anymore. Thank God.
Yeah. I was just saying, even to a couple other kids, my friend's kids always talk to me about the issues they have at college. I wish there was a course that they were all required to take on how to handle anxiety and stress. I wish it was a requirement.
I wish it was in high school. So I have a high schooler right now. I have a junior.
High school everywhere.
Yeah, yeah, I have a high schooler. I have a freshman in college right now. And I say it all the time. I think by the time they're about freshmen in high school, they have the cognitive ability. And it's a disservice we are having to these kids that we aren't. I mean, I just think back to my college experience, which was, there were a lot of good parts, but I was an anxious mess.
Yeah, yeah.
I could have had a much easier time if someone had given me just a few base. It doesn't have to be this long, whole drawn out thing, but even just like a 4 week or 6 week course, it would have made such a world of difference.
Yeah, you're right. The younger, and they can even just start a little bit, you know, younger. And then as they get to high school, that 4 to 6 week course would make a huge difference, because now they would have those tools taken to deal with, you know, being a freshman. Love it. Which it's the same thing you were actually talking about, even though this woman is saying whenever she goes to her in-laws, she has trouble getting out of the car because she has panic attacks because it's not a good experience.
Yeah. So, and there is sometimes, like, we have to also learn how to set boundaries, right? Like, if it's, like, in that situation, if it's a really negative experience over and over, well, let's dig into, okay, first off, what's actually happening? Are you allowing people to beat you up, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's, I think, a valid thing. And are you protecting yourself? So, like, if the situation is, I mean, I wouldn't know without knowing more, but might be a boundary issue. And it also might be I'm not going anymore. Like, there are times where I think there are times when our anxiety is something that we do need to learn how to, I don't want to say manage, but befriend, right? And work with. And there are times where we can just be like, no, this is like not a person I want to surround myself with.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. You don't know, but you have to ask yourself. Just because they're family doesn't mean I have to take this abuse.
No.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. And I'll be honest, just from personal experience, like I said, I love my parents. I love my mother, but she definitely triggers mine. I mean, she makes me feel like I'm a 13-year-old kid again. And I have had to learn how to, and boundaries aren't always saying something to the person. Sometimes it's removing myself.
Ooh. Yeah.
Sometimes the boundary is removing yourself, and sometimes is the boundary of laughing, honestly, inside. Yeah. Maybe you don't laugh in their face, depending on the person, but right. Sometimes you have to be like, oh my God, this is just their stuff that they're projecting, and just not take it so personally.
All right. I want to back up because you mentioned at the beginning that you were having shoulder issues and I think one of your coaches said you should try somatic breathing.
Yeah. Well, she said somatic therapy. And so basically,
okay.
A little bit different.
Yeah. So tell me the difference.
Yeah. So somatic therapy is a process of tapping into the physical symptoms. At least this is the way I do it and the way I was taught. Tapping into the physical symptoms of the body and learning to listen to what those symptoms are trying to communicate. So sometimes it is my belief, it's been shown, actually people have done research on it, that our things in our body are actually representations of things in our life. So I'll give myself as an example, my shoulder. I was born with this thing called a cystic hygroma. I had two massive surgeries. I have a huge scar on the left side. I'm lopsided. You can't tell it anymore because I've built up most of my strength. But anyways, I was born with this thing that impacted my body as I grew up. And I had like this twitch and this tightness and this tension, right? In my shoulder from the time because this was when I started when I was 6 months old. So for my entire life, basically. And it always felt like pressure. And ironically, in my life, everything I did, I put a lot of pressure on myself. My parents didn't put the pressure on me. I was always putting a ridiculous amount of pressure on myself because pressure, ironically, is what felt normal.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I learned to listen to this pressure and start to hear what it's trying to communicate, it was trying to tell me that I needed to learn that pressure was not the only way to live. And so my body, the less pressure I started applying outside, like my business, my relationships, the pressure in my neck and my shoulders started to get less and less and less. Now, I still have a little bit. I still do put some pressure on myself. We are who we are.
Yeah.
But I was able to learn from it how it was manifesting outside of my life. So sometimes people will come to me with a physical thing that will help to navigate things in the external. Sometimes, a lot of times people are coming because they're like, oh my God, I'm so anxious. Or I have a lot of people that come to me to help them grow their business. And there's a lot of stress with that. And they're trying to navigate all that. And so then we go to the body to help us understand what we're manifesting on the outside. So the two are, in my belief, are always connected. And often our body is actually speaking to us what needs to change on the outside, but we're just not listening.
I 100% agree, because even though I know what I had to deal with in my life that was causing more severe pain in my neck, even though I fell off my mountain bike, yes, there was physical stuff and there were spurs, I knew that I had not released certain angers that were storing up in my body. When I did, a lot less. Now, even though it's a lot better, if I start putting a lot of pressure on myself, like to perform, or I didn't say the right thing, or oh my God, what if I screwed a gig? It will start tightening. The difference is I know what it is.
Yeah. And that's such a beautiful example. And mine's no different. Like whenever like I add too much external pressure, the first place it goes is my left shoulder. And I can start to feel it like making like almost this.
Yeah,
but now
yeah.
that I have done this work and I have that knowledge, I'm not always good about it, but I can take the steps to make sure, okay, am I taking care of myself? Am I meditating? And then that's where these other tools like breath work and other things help to support us. But I go into the body first to then figure out what are the tools we need to support us. And some people, that alone, like they can have these like, you know, I've had a few people where it was like serious boundary stuff. And it was like what they were feeling in their body, like suffocating, was because they were not setting up appropriate boundaries with clients or with their family or whoever.
Yeah.
And once we did, that suffocating feeling started, you know, and then when it starts to come up again, they're like, oh, okay, my body is alerting me always. All the time our bodies are alerting us.
You know, it's funny. I was just listening to another podcast yesterday that my client sent me, and it was talking about the fact that for some reason, most people, when it comes to family, they don't set those boundaries because there's so much guilt around, come on, their blood, that's your mom, that's your dad, that's your brother. And we, for some reason, feel like we have to forgive them a billion times, even though they could mentally abuse us or physically abuse us. I'm sure you get clients like that. You know?
Yeah, all the time. And it's like what I always, and it's not an easy thing. And it's something I still work on myself. Cause I mean, hey, I'm a recovering people pleaser. I'm the first one to admit it. It's, believe it or not, it actually, when you set them and you set them from love, not from manipulation, which is a big difference. Cause sometimes people are setting them cause they're trying to manipulate someone to do or be a certain way. That's not why we set boundaries. It actually builds intimacy. And it builds a stronger relationship in the end when we can communicate them and we're coming from a loving place.
I'm so glad you said that. You're right. You're right. When it's coming from love, so many great things can come out of it.
Yeah. Not when you it's just we got to get clean about it sometimes. Like I've not been clean about it sometimes. I've set a boundary and it was from like, I don't want to say manipulation, but it was from like I was pissed off or something. And that does not often land well and maybe doesn't go over well. It's not received well. But when I clean up all my stuff around it first, it definitely tends to have, not always is it still received right away, but in the long run, it seems to be better for everyone.
I agree. I agree. Rachel, I've loved having you on. This has been awesome. There's a lot of great stuff to go over, but I do want to ask just a couple more things.
Yeah.
Which, let's see. Can we get it in? I think we can get it in. The biggest thing that I didn't cover is how do you know what style yoga is right for you?
I think you just go try a bunch and you land at the one that's like that called to me. I'll be honest. I think it evolves too. Like when I first started, I only wanted like the hardcore, you know, kick my butt. And I still love that. But like yesterday, I took my daughter, my 17-year-old daughter, and I went to a yin class that was very meditative, restorative style. And it was exactly what I needed. And I think some days we need that. Some days I just want to play a yoga nidra and lie on my couch and practically take a nap. That is yoga, FYI. Some days I want my, like this morning I went to an ass kicking class. So yeah. I think go try it all and try multiple instructors, because sometimes also it's not just the style. Different teachers teach in different, like some are more physical, some are more spiritual, some do a beautiful job of blending it. And you just gotta, it's like anything, you just gotta test the waters till you find. I do believe there is a style out there for everyone, and you will change, right? As we age, different phases in our life, I think we also have different needs and desires.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, they want to know your routine. They want to know if you meditate during yoga or if it's separate and when you do it.
Oh, I love talking about this. So I am a very disciplined person, and a lot of people are, I think, a little bit, I don't know, they don't get it or they're maybe shocked by it. But I wake up every day and I usually meditate 20 minutes. Okay. I take about 5 minutes of that to do breath work, between 20 and 25 minutes, depending on if I hit snooze too many times. Then I get my kid if she's with me, because I am a divorced mom. So she's with me sometimes. She's with her dad sometimes. The other one's off to college. I help her get her, because she's going to be gone soon too. I get her up and out, right? Even though she doesn't really need me to, just because I enjoy it. And then I either go teach a class or I go take a class pretty much every morning, 6 days a week. After that, I'm, you know, doing my work on calls, coaching, leading my staff, connecting with new leads, you know, all the things you do all day long, being a business owner, marketing, sales, all that stuff. Then in the evening, when I'm a good girl, I try to get in another meditation practice. It doesn't happen a lot, but it happens some days. Okay. On a ideal world, that would be my ideal schedule. And then I crash. No, I Netflix. I binge Netflix. And then I go to bed. I am very human. Oh, I should have added in.
I want to know what you're watching on Netflix right now. I know.
Okay, I will say that. But before, let me do add one more piece. After I meditate, I usually take about 5-ish minutes to journal self-coach, where I write down things like I
call it. At night?
No, in the morning.
In the morning.
I like to direct, and I tell all my clients to do this, and I think it's really important. We wake up and we tell ourselves that you're drinking tea or coffee, how you like it when you go to the coffee shop, right? I like oat milk in my coffee. Okay. I don't just expect them to serve me a coffee the way I like it. I have to order it. And I think it's very important that every morning we order up what we want to think. Otherwise, our default brain will go where it wants to go. So I order up thoughts for my day. And yes, what am I watching on Netflix? I am watching This Is Us. That show that was on back then, I never had watched it. My daughter and I are watching it, and oh my God, it's so good. I'm obsessed. And if it weren't for her, I probably would be done by now, because I would just binge and stay up all night. But thank goodness that she's like, no, we can't watch another one, because she likes to go to bed by 9 o'clock. So
that's awesome. The daughter.
Yeah. Like, no, so it's mom, my 17-year-old that keeps me from staying up all night.
Oh my God. All right, Rachel. I really appreciate you being on. Is there anything, we're going to tell them where to find you, but is there anything we didn't get in that you want to tell the Let's Keep It Real people?
Be kind and patient with yourself. Be compassionate. It's probably the key to all of this, to unshame all of the shit that we carry day in and day out, that you don't have to be ashamed. You really don't. You're just a human doing the best you can.
I like that. And now, where can they find you?
So they can find me on Instagram, Rachel B. Friedman. My website is beyondthemat.com. So because I believe that all of this is just yoga on and off the mat. It's what made me fall in love with it all. Yeah, those are the two main places. I'm on Facebook too, but really only because, you know, copy paste, it's easy.
And if they are in Georgia, where's your studio?
If they're in Georgia, my studio is in Marietta. So it's a suburb of Atlanta. All of our classes are streamed also. So if you're not in Georgia, but you like my energy, you can come practice with me virtually.
Oh.
You just have to sign up online and we have a virtual membership too.
That's awesome.
And it's called Soma Power Yoga because Somatic Coach School Soma, I try to keep everything somewhat on brand.
All right, my Let's Keep It Real people. Rachel and I would really appreciate you liking, rating it, and sharing it, even with just one other person that you believe would benefit. And until next time, you know what I'm going to say. Bye, Rachel, and toodles.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to share and subscribe if you enjoyed the show. And remember, keep spreading the positive.